Blog Talk Radio.
February 19, 2019, 8 o'clock on the East Coast. You're listening to a live presentation of the Ant Canary Experience. I am your host, Ant Canary, coming to you live, sitting in the car, in the parking lot, in front of the house, in a sleet storm. It is currently sleeting, rain and sleet, coming down pretty good. Noises going on inside. I thought I'd come out here tonight to do the show to get away from the noises, but I don't know if you can hear, but you can kind of hear the sleet coming out. See if you can hear it. Yep, that's sleet and freezing rain. But it's all good. This weather has been kind of weird. Well, I ain't gonna say kind of weird. This weather has been weird. I'm one of those people that think that, you know, climate change, that there's something going on, but I'm not an expert in the field because I haven't studied weather and all that kind of stuff, but there's something going on. And, you know, for people to just, you know, flat out deny it, well, that's your issue. Like I said, I'm not an expert, but my eyes work. I can see there's something weird happening. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. If you want to call in tonight, 563-999-3682. 563-999-3682. And tonight's topic is we're going to be talking about the story of Fannie Lou Hamer. You may have heard about her. Maybe you haven't. She is one of the many people that were involved in the civil rights movement back in the 50s and the 60s. And we're going to talk about her tonight because we're still celebrating Black History Month, shortest month of the year. But, you know, we're gonna go ahead and get it. But before we talk about her, just want to say, get a few things out there. This past weekend, Colin Kaepernick got, as the young people you would say, got paid. The NFL decided to to pay him. Let me do this. I may have to step back inside. I don't know if I've got a signal or not. So let me gather up my things, and we're going to take this inside, just be on the safe side, because I'm not sure if you're able to hear me. And if you can't hear me, then we don't have a show. So let me just gather up my things, and we're going to step inside. Well, wait a minute. Okay. We're good. Okay. You can hear me. All right. like I said, I may have to go inside. The signal may be messed up because of the, but we'll figure it out. But anyway, Colin Kaepernick got paid. We don't know how much he got paid, but we're quite sure that it was a whole lot of money. Thing is with that, the haters are still hating. He's been out of the league for about 3 years, and the haters are still hating. You know, it's kind of jacked up that you're mad at somebody for, and you don't know what the hell you're mad at them for. There is not a law in this country that says that you have to stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. There is no law in this country that says that you got to stand for the national anthem. None. Matter of fact, there was a Supreme Court ruling back in the 50s that said this. You don't have to stand for the national anthem or the Pledge of Allegiance. But people with their fake patriotism, their fake outrage, gets mad for no reason. This man, and I've done stories on this, this man said why he did what he did. It was even recommended for him to take a knee from someone in the military. Because before he took a knee, he was sitting on the bench. Not bothering nobody. Nobody. Okay. Just wasn't bothering anybody. And then you got the haters hating for no reason, calling them everything you can think of. But he got paid. And if you're listening and you don't remember what he was protesting about, it was against police brutality and racism. It wasn't about the flag, and it wasn't about the military. So why am I constantly getting in arguments with people about this every day over the same shit, over and over and over again? You know why? I think most of it's racism, because you took what he said out of context and you made it to be what you wanted it to be, which has got nothing to do with the military or the flag or the anthem, which is racist in itself. But, you know, you took it, you made it what you want it to be, and you're just constantly getting on them. And the thing is, he's making a whole, he's got a whole lot more money than what you've got. And he's giving money to causes. Why a lot of people sitting around there bitching about nothing because they got nothing better to do. As a matter of fact, one of the guys that protested with them plays for the Carolina Panthers. He's got an extended contract. So he's getting paid too. So this wasn't about the money. This was about the NFL owners not giving this man a job. because they decided if they, because I guarantee you, it was a lot because to do with Trump, because a lot of people, and a lot of people in his party, if they say anything bad about this clown, all he'll do is get on Twitter and he'll talk shit about it. And that's what they're afraid of. And I think that's what these owners were afraid of, that if they would have gotten, if they would have picked him up, then he would have said something and that would have been the end of it. And there was also a rumor that the new football league that started a couple ago, matter of fact, started the weekend after the Super Bowl, they were going to, they offered him a 20, I think it was like a $20 million deal, and he turned them down or something like that. Well, that turned out to be false. So people love to make shit up right and left because it makes them feel better. And then they like to get on social media and spew that garbage. And then the only way to shut them down is to come back and give them the facts. And all of a sudden you hear crickets. So he's getting paid. And I'm glad for him because I take a knee myself. If I go to a sporting event next time, I'm not going to stand. Because all these, because most of these people that are doing all the most whining about this, those are the same ones when they are at games. A lot of them are in the bathroom or in line for something to eat or doing something else. Or if they're at home, they're doing something else. Or if they're at a sports bar, they're doing something else. And I call these people phony-ass patriots because they're full of shit. Got into a little thing today because there's a story going around that a good team to get to pick him up would be the Panthers, and I'm a Panthers fan and a Cowboys fan. And then you got people on social media, as usual, whining and bitching and moaning. And my thing is, if you ain't got no money on the table, you don't tell these owners what they can do. If they want to pick up a player, they pick up a player. I guarantee you they'll pick up players that have done drugs and have done domestic violence pretty quick. But this guy, he didn't do anything, and they won't pick him up because he got blackballed. Now he got paid. I'm good with it. I got no problem with it. You know, and then today I got into it all day. I need to stop doing this. I got into an all day argument with clowns because there's a there's a sheriff's department around somewhere around in the state. I can't remember exactly where it is because the whole thing gave me a freaking headache. They want to put "And God We Trust" on the back of their cars. And all I simply said was, whatever happened to separation of church and state? And why'd I say that? That went to an all, and when I say all day, that went to an 8-hour thing of arguing, well, not arguing, but people back and forth. And I will say this, religious people are some of the most intolerant, judgmental assholes that you ever want to meet. And I had no problem saying that. You're so judgmental, so, you know, the opposite of what you claim that you go to church for. The total opposite. And all I simply said, that I don't want religion and politics mixing together because you're going to have issues. And you got this clown that's in the White House. If he ever, he's never probably never set foot in a church, and if he did, he'd probably explode. But you got these evangelicals loving him. But at the same time, when Obama was in office, you know, you want to call him a secret Muslim. You know, you didn't believe he was a Christian, and now you got this clown in there, and all of a sudden he can do no wrong. He's the best thing you ever seen. And so I simply stated that I don't think it's right to put that kind of thing on vehicles or whatever paid by everybody's taxpayer money when we all don't believe in the same thing. I guess you could say I'm a former Christian. I grew up in the church. I think the whole thing is phony. So I think a lot of people running around here pretending that they're so religious are full of shit. So I, you know, and I think, you know, and I've said it before, religion is, to me, well, not to me, I mean, it's a fact. Religion is man-made. It's full of junk. All religions, you know, most religions, you know, they say they don't, you know, they don't kill and all that. Yes, they do. A lot of these religions, if you don't convert, you know, we'll kill you. What kind of shit is that? I don't have to convert to your way of thinking. I got a brain. I use it. And so, to me, organized religion is just, I'm not down with it. I'm pretty much done with it. But you tell black folks some stuff like that, boy, I can't believe it. I don't believe it. Because if you put a logic to a lot of this stuff, you wouldn't believe half the stuff either. There were many religions before Christianity rolled around. King James, his version of the Bible, King James was a bisexual, but yet instead you got people running around, you know, jumping on homosexuals. I don't care what homosexuals do in the privacy of their own house. That's their business. I got enough stuff to worry about. I don't care. It ain't affecting me. I don't care about gay marriage. It ain't got nothing to do with me. My thing is, I like to mind my own business. Just like I don't want somebody else minding my business, I mind my own business. See, I don't care. And all that religion shit is just bull. It's straight up bullshit. And most religious people are they're so judgmental. They want to judge everybody else, but they don't want to judge themselves. So this went on all day long, back and forth, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, somebody bought up to my, and God, we trust on money, blah, blah, blah. Well, if it's on money, you ain't going to spend it. Look, my money in my pocket ain't got nothing to do with what's on it. I'm still going to spend it. They didn't put the phrase on money, on paper money, until 1954, 55. And that was only because America was dealing with Russia at the time. So what's your point? So, you know, everybody's got to, you know, well, one day you're going to meet your judgment. Okay, well, when that day gets here, we'll find out. But until then, that don't give you the right to judge me because, you know, you don't judge me. There's no human on this planet that's capable of judging anybody else. It ain't your position. It's not your job. You worry about what goes on in your house. You worry about what goes on with your people. You worry about you, and I worry about me. You know, I've said this before, and it's a proven fact. Every family, everybody's family, you got at least one person that's gay in your family. So why don't you worry about that person? Instead of worrying about the gay people down the street that don't even bother you. And see, living here in the South, these religious people down here, you talking about people full of shit. I'm telling you. They are so full of it, it ain't even funny. Coming out here and drive these back roads like I did this weekend, went to go visit my mother because I had to get some of that home cooking. You know how that is, boy, I'm telling you. So I had to get some of that home cooking. So I drove and I didn't take the quickest way to get there. I took the back roads because every now and again on the weekend, I like to go to back roads so I can see stuff and think. You know, I had the radio on, think, just look at the view, see what, because it was pretty decent weekend this weekend. And so I did. And then driving on these rural roads around here, you know, you see crosses everywhere. You see thank you Jesus signs everywhere. You see churches everywhere. You know, and these are the same people that want to claim up and down that everybody else trying to take their right to religion, you know, which is bullshit. The church is all over the place around here. Any place that you can put a business or something in, there's usually going to be a church sitting there. I mean, they're everywhere. You can get a map and draw a 5-mile radius from a spot, and there's going to be at least, 10 churches? In that radius, maybe more, depending on where you are at the time. They're everywhere. So all I simply was saying that, you know, there needs to be a line between religion and government, because religion and government doesn't do any good for anybody. And these are the same people that not too long ago were sitting there crying about what they do, the Sharia law. They want to do the same thing here, but it's not going to be Sharia law. It's Christian law. Everybody doesn't believe the same thing. Back before Christianity came around, the Norse countries, Norway and Scandinavia and all those, they had their own myths. When they had a thunderstorm, you know, they were goddesses of earth. They were, I mean, everything that happened, they had a god or goddess for. What do you think the day Thursday comes from? Thursday comes from Thor's day. Matter of fact, most of the days of the week are named after gods. Thursday after Thor. Friday is named after a goddess. Saturday is named after Saturn. Sunday is named after the sun. Monday is named after the moon. Tuesday and Wednesday are named after goddesses. I can't remember the top of my head. Every civilization had some kind of religion or mythology that came along with it. Greek mythology, Roman mythology, Egyptian, Africans. You know, Africans had their own religion. I mean, all the major Native Americans, you know, had their own religion. So all most major civilizations had their own religion before Christianity came around. And I was looking at a YouTube video this past weekend that gets down to the nitty gritty about, you know, Christianity is man made. It was made for a reason. You know, we just finished celebrating the Saturnalia season, or as some people call Christmas. And Christmas is based off of Saturnalia. If you don't know what that is, look it up. It was a pagan holiday for a week. It lasted for a week. And it's a whole lot different than the way we celebrate Christmas here. But Christianity basically was created because somebody had come up with the idea that, you know, we don't want these people out here doing all these pagan rituals and all this kind of stuff. So, yeah, we're gonna come up with this, and we're going to incorporate some of those pagan religions, pagan celebrations and stuff, and we're going to implement them into this religion. We're getting ready to come up on another one, which has nothing to do with the resurrection. It's got to do with the goddess Ishtar, if I'm saying that right. She's the goddess of fertility. That's why you have Easter eggs and rabbits. Now, can somebody explain to me what an Easter egg and a rabbit has to do with the resurrection? Nothing. It was incorporated because at the time the people were coming up with Christianity, they didn't want these people doing these pagan rituals, so they decided to incorporate that into Christianity. And if you don't believe anything I'm saying, you can look this stuff up yourself. I tell you that every week. Whatever topic I'm talking about, if you don't believe me, look it up. I did. That's why my views have changed, because I've looked up this information and it's like, nah, I'm good. I'm good. I'm straight. So all of this is just man-made religions. Other people trying to tell you what to think and how to feel and all that. No, I do that on my own. And then you got people, well, you know, you'll find that one day. Well, when that day gets here, I'll find out by myself. Because a lot of people don't realize a lot of the stories in the Bible were plagiarized from other stories. I'll give you this, and then I'll go ahead and we'll start talking about what you're talking about. Look up the story of Noah and the Ark. Do you really think that it's possible to build a boat? This guy was, what, 1,000 years old, 500 years, six, how old he was, to build a boat and to get two of every creature on this boat and sail for 40 days? Where are you going to put all these animals at? Two of each. Where did you put the fish? Where did you put the octopi and the piranhas? and the sharks, the hammerhead sharks, the crab, the minnows, living side by side with tigers and lions and giraffes and elephants and snakes and bugs, and flies, mosquitoes, gnats. I mean, just think about it. Use logic and think about some of this stuff. A lot of stuff, you know, we were told this stuff because it was just tradition. And that's what I asked somebody the question today. Do you believe that, or was that told to you? Did you believe that, or was that told to you? You know? Because it was handed down. And, yeah. Yeah. I mean, same thing in my family. Same thing probably in your family. I mean, yeah. You believed it because you were told. And so as I got older and doing this show, I have to do research. And a lot of this stuff is like, nah, I'm good. I'm good. So that was an all day thing. And I don't get on social media to yak about stuff all day. But, you know, usually when people, you know, coming at you with nonsense, I gotta come back. Thing was, you know, I'm not gonna let this stuff slide by without giving it an answer. And so I used memes and all that kind of stuff, and it pretty much died down, so I don't have any more issues. But I'm sure there'll be a few stragglers, you know, chiming in with their asinine comments, you know. So, whatever. All right. So, let's get into the topic at hand. I think I'm going to have to go inside. I hope I'm not losing the signal. I guess it's the way I got the laptop sitting on my lap. Okay, so let's go ahead, and I'm just going to run a test. I also have another way in case this goes down, but we'll see. Anyway, matter of fact, I may have to do that just to be on the safe side while I play a clip. But I've got four short clips. They're not very long. What I want to do is just read, give a little bit of reading first. All right, let me see something. I may have to do, hold on 1 second. Okay, I think we're still good. I'm going to have to play a clip to make sure I'm still online. Okay. I may have to go inside, maybe. I had it just right. Just like I wanted. It's kind of hard to sit out here in the car and do this, but we're going to make it work. Anyway, because I only got about an hour left, so we're good. Okay, so let's talk about Fannie Lou Hamer. She was born October 16, 1917, and died March 14, 1977. She was an American voting and women's rights activist, community organizer, and a leader in the civil rights movement. She was co-founder and vice chair of the Freedom Democratic Party, which she represented at the 1964 Democratic National Convention. She also organized Mississippi's Freedom Summer along with the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, which is SNCC. She was also co-founder of the National Women's Political Caucus, an organization created to recruit, train, and support women of all races who wish to seek election to government office. See, I think I've still got a connection. Okay. Hamer began civil rights activism in 1962, continuing into her health decline 9 years later. She was known for her use of spiritual hymns, in quotes, and her resilience in leading the civil rights movement for black women in Mississippi. She was also extorted, threatened, harassed, shot at, and assaulted by white supremacists and police while trying to register for and exercise her right to vote. She later helped and encouraged thousands of African Americans in Mississippi to become registered voters and helped hundreds of disenfranchised people in her area throughout her work and programs like the Freedom Farm Cooperative. She unsuccessfully ran for Mississippi Senator in 1964 and the Mississippi State Senate in 1971. In 1970, she led legal action against the government of Sunflower County, Mississippi, for continued illegal segregation. She had died on March 14, 1977. She was 59 years old in Mound Bayou, Mississippi. Her memorial service was widely attended, and her eulogy was delivered by U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Andrew Young. She was posthumously inducted into the National Women's Hall of Fame in 1993. Let me give a little bit more background on her. She was the last of 20 children. Matter of fact, her family were sharecroppers. There was something here that she was. Oh, okay. Where's that? Like I said, she was. Her family were sharecroppers, and she had to leave school early to support her aging parents. By age 13, she could pick 200 to 300 pounds of cotton daily, despite having a disfigured leg as a result of polio. She later got married. She got married in 1945. And she had, they raised two girls that they adopted, that her and her husband adopted. One of the girls died of internal hemorrhaging after she was denied admission to the local hospital on account of her mother's activism. Now, that's pretty banged up. That hospital wouldn't take her because her mother was out there trying to do good for other people. Pretty jacked up. In 1962, Hammer first learned about the constitutional right to vote from volunteers at the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, who had visited her in Mound Bayou, Mississippi. She began to take direct political action in the civil rights movement. On October 31st, she traveled with other activists to Indianola, Mississippi, hoping to register the vote. The registration test, crafted to keep blacks from voting, asked her to explain de facto laws. And then she said, "I knowed as much about a de facto law as a horse knows about Christmas Day," she recalled. Rejected, she came home to find the boss man raising Cain. She had better withdraw her registration, she was told, because we're not ready for that in Mississippi. She said, "I did not try to register for you," told her boss. "I tried to register for myself." She was immediately fired and kicked off the plantation. Her husband was required to stay on the land until the end of the harvest. Hammer moved between homes over the next several days for protection. On September 10th, while staying with friend Mary Tucker, Hammer was shot at 16 times in a drive-by shooting by white supremacists. No one was injured in the event. The next day, Hammer and her family evacuated to nearby Tallahatchie County for fears of retribution by the KKK over her attempt to vote. They remained there nearly 3 months. On December 4th, just after returning to her hometown, she went to the courthouse in Indianola to take the literacy test again, but failed and was turned away. Hammer told the register that, "You'll see me every 30 days until I pass." It goes on. On January 10, 1963, Hamer took the literacy test a third time. She was successful and was informed that she was now a registered voter in the state of Mississippi. However, when she attempted to vote that fall, she discovered her registration gave her no actual power to vote, as the county required voters to have 2 poll tax receipts. This requirement had emerged in some, mostly former Confederate states, after the right to vote was first given to all races in the 1870 ratification of the 15th Amendment to the United States Constitution. These laws, along with the literacy test and local, local government acts of coercion, were used against blacks and Native Americans. Hamer later paid for and acquired the poll tax receipts. Hamer had begun to become more involved in these in SNCC after these incidents. She attended many Southern Christian leadership conferences, which she was at times taught classes for, and also various SNCC workshops. She traveled to gather signatures for petitions to attempt to be granted federal resources for impoverished black families across the South. Here's some more. Where am I at? After becoming a field secretary for SNCC in 1963, Hamer decided to attend a pro-citizenship conference by the Southern Christian Leadership Conference in Charleston, South Carolina. Traveling by bus with other co-activists, the party stopped for a break in Winona, Mississippi. Some of the activists went inside a local cafe but were refused service by the waitress. Shortly after, a Mississippi State Highway patrolman took out his billy club and intimidated the activists into leaving. One of the group decided to take down the officer's license plate number. While doing so, the patrolman and a police chief entered the cafe and arrested the party. Hamer left the bus and inquired if they could continue on their journey back to Greenwood, Mississippi. At that point, the officers arrested her as well. Once in county jail, Hamer's colleagues were beaten by the police in the booking room, which included 15-year-old June Johnson for not saying sir in her replies to the officer. Hamer was then taken to a cell where 2 inmates were ordered by the state trooper to beat her using a blackjack. The police ensured she was held down during the almost fatal beating, and when she started to scream, beat her further. Hamer was groped repeatedly by officers during the assault. When she attempted to resist, she states an officer took my dress, pulled it up over my shoulders, leaving my body exposed to 5 men. Another in her group was beaten until she was unable to talk. A third, a teenager, was beaten, stomped on, and stripped. An activist from SNCC came the next day to see if they could help, but was beaten until his eyes were shut when he did not address an officer in the expected In other words, when he didn't say sir, he got beat. Man, this is just, boy, I tell you what, this, you know, reading this just starts to piss you off. Hamer was released on June 12, 1963. She needed more than a month to recuperate from the beatings and never fully recovered. Though the incident had profound physical and psychological effects, including a blood clot over her left eye and permanent damage to one of her kidneys, she returned to Mississippi to organize voter registration drives, including the Freedom Ballot Campaign, a mock election in 1963, and the Freedom Summer Initiative the following year. She was known to the volunteers of the Freedom Summer as a motherly figure who believed that the civil rights effort should be multiracial in nature. In addition to her northern guests, Hamer played host to Tuskegee University student activists Sammy Young Jr. and Wendell Parris. I think I'm saying this, Young and Parrish grew to become profound activists and organizers under Hamer's tutelage. Young was murdered in 1966 at a Standard Oil gas station in Macon County, Alabama, for using white-only bathroom. So I don't want nobody telling me, you know, this racism. Well, I tell you, this, and in some of the clips, I'll play the clips for you. It's a whole lot better than me reading a lot of this stuff. But it's just, you know, but you're going to hear in one of the clips where she went to the Democratic National Convention, and that created some controversy. Excuse me. So I'm going to play this first short clip because I want to make sure that we still got our connection, because I may have to go inside. And it's still raining. I don't know if you can hear it or not, but I'm going to play this. Well, I could do something else, but let me just play this to make sure that we're working. All right, here we go. We're not working. I don't think we're working. Okay. Now let's try this. Had to come back inside. So let's go. Let me see if this is working. Okay, okay, let's go here.
Mississippi is still a very rough place. You know, people is not just walking up like they used to do in the past, walking out, you know, shooting a man down or getting maybe 200 or 300 people carrying you out and lynching you, but it's in a more subtle way. You know, they can let you starve to death, not give you jobs. These are some of the things that's happening right now in Mississippi. See, Mississippi is not actually Mississippi's problem. Mississippi is America's problem. Because if America wanted to do something about what has been going on Mississippi, it could have stopped by now. It wouldn't have been in the past few years, between 40 and 50 churches bombed and burned. You see, and this leads me to say, you know, all of the burning and bombing that was done to us and the houses, nobody never said too much about that, and nothing was done. But let something be burned, you know, by a black man, and then, my God, you know. You see, the flag is drenched with our blood. Because, you see, so many of our ancestors was killed because we have never accepted slavery. We had to live on it, but we've never wanted it. So we know that this flag is drenched with our blood. So what the young people are saying now, give us a chance to be young men, respected as a man, as we know this country was built on the black backs of black people across this country. And if we don't have it, you ain't going to have it either, because we going to tear it up. That's what they're saying. And people ought to understand that. I don't see why they don't understand that. They know what they've done to us. All across this country, they know what they've done to us. This country is desperately sick, and man is on the critical list. I really don't know where we go from here.
The testimony before the Credentials Committee, the FDP had a lineup of very different people. They had Rita Schwerner, the widow of Mickey, who had been killed in Neshoba County. They had Martin Luther King. Everybody knew King.
the seating of the delegation from the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party has political and moral significance far beyond the borders of Mississippi or the halls of this convention.
But the highlight of the testimony was that of Fannie Lou Hamer. The sharecropper who had been evicted from her plantation had come to symbolize the Mississippi movement.
Mr. Chairman, and to the Credentials Committee, it was the 31st of August in 1962 that 18 of us traveled 26 miles to the county courthouse in Indianola to try to register to become first-class citizens. We was met in Indianola by policemen.
The president, Lyndon Johnson, he's not afraid of Martin Luther King's testimony. He's afraid of Fannie Lou Hamer's testimony. And so he decides that the country should not see her testify live.
Johnson is in the White House, and he convened an impromptu press conference.
We will return to this scene in Atlantic City, but now we switch to the White House and NBC's Robert Goralsky.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
On this day, 9 months ago,
he did it knowing that they would break away, thinking he might announce who his choice of vice president was going to be. Instead, he gets up there and he announces, get this, he announces that it's 9 months to the day since Governor Connally, who was there, was shot along with President Kennedy. So he announced a 9-month anniversary. Everybody's scratching their heads.
Thank you very much.
And then he leaves. And by that time, Fannie Lou Hamer's testimony was over. However, it backfired on Johnson because it became a story that she had been taken off television, and in the news that night and for days afterwards, they replayed her testimony.
I was carried to the county jail and put in the booking room. They left some of the people in the booking room and began to place us in cell.
She had Mississippi in her bones. Martin Luther King or the SNCC field secretaries, they couldn't do what Fannie Lou Hamer did. They couldn't be a sharecropper and express what it meant, right? And that's what Fannie Lou Hamer did.
And it wasn't too long before three white men came to my cell. One of these men was the State Highway Patrol. He said, we're going to make you wish you were dead.
Okay. So play those first two clips just to make sure we're back on. So we're back on. Okay. We've got a good signal. All right. You're still sleeping outside. All right. Let me read a little bit more, and then we'll play a couple more clips. Let's see. I want to start. It's just like what the clip said. She went to the 64th Democratic National Convention to stand as the official delegation from the state of Mississippi. Hamer's televised testimony was interrupted because of a scheduled speech that President Lyndon Johnson delivered to 30 governors in the East Room of the White House. However, most of the major news networks broadcast her testimony later that evening to the nation, giving Hamer and the MFDP much exposure. And the MF, if I hadn't said it before, the MFDP is the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party. Because you have to remember back then, in those days, even though now it's different. Back then, I mean, there were races in the Democratic Party, and Lyndon Johnson was, don't know if he was or not, but he was purported to be a racist. Because he pretty much didn't want her speech to be on TV. And this is what she said, or some of what she said. She said, all of this is on account we want to register to become first-class citizens, and that the Freedom Democratic Party is not seated now, I question America. Is this America, the land of the free and the home of the brave, where we have to sleep with our telephones off the hook because our lives are threatened daily because we want to live as decent human beings in America? You know, it's pretty messed up, and it's kind of like we're still going through the same stuff now. You would think this stuff would have been over with by now. 1964, Hamer unsuccessfully ran for a seat in the U.S. Senate. She continued to work on other projects, including grassroots-level Head Start programs and Martin Luther King's Poor People campaign. With the help of Julius Lester and Mary Varela, she published her autobiography in 1967. She said she was tired of all the beating, and there is so much hate. Only God has kept the Negro sane. She saw equality across all aspects of society. In Hamer's view, African Americans were not technically free if they were not afforded the same opportunities as whites, including those in the agricultural industry. Sharecropping was the most common form of post-slavery activity and income in the South. The New Deal era explained so that many blacks were physically and economically displaced due to the various projects appearing around the country. Hamer did not wish to have blacks be dependent on any group or any longer, so she wanted to give them a voice through an agricultural movement. James Eastland, a white senator, was among the groups of people who sought to keep African Americans disenfranchised and segregated from society. His influence on the overarching agricultural industry often suppressed minority groups to keep whites as the only power force in America. Hamer objected to this and consequently pioneered the Freedom Farm Cooperative, the FFC, in 1969, and an attempt to redistribute economic power across groups and to solidify an economic standing amongst African Americans. In the same vein as the Freedom Farm Collective, Hamer partnered with the NCNW, established an interracial and interregional support program called the Pig Project to provide protein for people who had previously could not afford meat. She also wanted to have land more accessible to African Americans. To do this, she started a small pig bank with a starting donation from the National Council of Negro Women of 5 boars and 50 gilts. And that's something I've never heard of. Through the pig bank, a family could care for a pregnant female pig until it bore its offspring. Subsequently, they would raise the piglets and use them for food and financial gain. Within 5 years, thousands of pigs were available for breeding. Hamer used the success of the bank to begin fundraising for the Maine Farming Cooperation. She was able to convince the then editor of the Harvard Crimson, James Fallows, to write an article that advocated for donations to the FFC. Eventually, the FFC had raised around $8,000, which allowed Hamer to purchase 40 acres of land previously owned by black farmer who could no longer afford to occupy the land. This land became the Freedom Farm. The farm had three main objectives: establish an agricultural organization that could supplement the nutritional needs of America's most disenfranchised people, to provide acceptable housing development, and to create an entrepreneurial business incubator that will provide resources for new companies and retraining for those with limited educational but manual experience. let's see. Over time, the FCC offers various other services such as financial counseling, a scholarship fund, and a housing agency. The FCC aided in securing 35 Federal Housing Administration subsidized homes for struggling black families. Through her success, Hamer managed to acquire a new home, which served as inspiration for others to begin rebuilding themselves up. The FCC ultimately disbanded in 1975 due to lack of funding. And her death, having surgery in 1961 to remove a tumor, 44-year-old Hamer was also given a hysterectomy without consent by a white doctor. This was a frequent occurrence under Mississippi's compulsory sterilization plan to reduce the number of poor blacks in the state. Hamer is credited with coining the phrase Mississippi appendectomy as a euphemism for the involuntary or uninformed sterilization of black women common in the South in the 1960s. She came out of the extended period in hospital. She came out of an extended period in hospital for nervous exhaustion in 1972 and was hospitalized again in January 1974 for a nervous breakdown. By June 1974, Hamer was said to be in extremely poor health. 2 years later, she was diagnosed with and had surgery for breast cancer. Hamer died of complications from hypertension. For hypertension and breast cancer on March 14, 1977, age 59, at Taborian Hospital, Mound Bayou, Mississippi. She was buried in her hometown of Ruleville, Mississippi. Her tombstone is engraved with one of her famous quotes, "I am sick and tired of being sick and tired." I didn't know that she received many awards both in her lifetime and posthumously. She received a Doctor of Law from Shaw University, an honorary degree from Columbia College, Chicago, in 1970, and Howard University in 1972. She was inducted into the National Women's Hall of Fame in 1993. She received the Paul Robeson Award from Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority, the Mary Church Terrell Award, an honorary lifetime member from Delta Sigma Theta, and the National Sojourner Truth Meritorious Service Award. A remembrance of her life was given in the U.S. House of Representatives on the 100th anniversary of her birth, October 6, 1917, by Texas Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee. So she had an post office named after her. I believe she also had a school named after her too. Matter of fact, yeah, 1993, a high school was formed bearing her name as a focus on humanities and social justice. So to say the least, she had a very interesting life, and she also did a lot for the civil rights movement. I'm going to play this short clip and be right back.
And they, you know, when I walked in with the two white men that had carried me down, and they cursed me all the way down. They would ask me questions, and when I would try to answer, they would tell me to hush. And when I walked inside of the booking room, one of the policemen went over and jumped up on one of the Negro's feet that was with us. And then they just began to, you know, put us in cells. And I was put in a cell with Miss Evesta Simpson. And after I was put in this cell, I could just hear some horrible screams and horrible sounds, you know, of licks. And I saw one of the girls was 15 years old, was with us. And she passed my cell, and she was real bloody.
And then they asked the little man that cleaned up the jail to go inside and mop up that blood. And then I heard some more screaming, and I heard some awful sounds. And I would hear somebody when they say, "Can't you say yes, sir, nigger? Can't you say yes, sir?" And they would call her names that I wouldn't want to go on tape. And she said, "Yes, I can say yes, sir." So I said, and she said, "I don't know you well enough." And I would hear when she would hit the floor again. And finally, she began to pray. And she asked God to have mercy on these people because they didn't know what they was doing. And after a while, they passed my cell door with this young woman, Miss Annelle Ponder. And one of her eyes looked like blood. And her hair was standing up on her head, and her clothes had been torn from the shoulder down to the waist. And then three white men came to my cell, and one of them was a state highway patrolman because he was wearing a little silver plate across his pocket that said John L. Bassinger. And he asked me where I was from, and I told him I was from Louisville. And he said, "I'm going to check that." And he went out, and I guess he called Louisville. And they didn't like me in Louisville because I worked with voter registration there. And when he came back, he said, "You damn right." They said, "You're from Louisville, all right. And we gonna make you wish you was dead." And they led me out of that cell into another cell. And he gave a Negro prisoner a blackjack. And he ordered me to lay down on a bunk bed. And a Negro prisoner said, "Do you want me to beat her with this, sir?" And he said, "You damn right. Because if you don't, you know what I'll do for you." And I laid down on the bunk like he ordered me to do. And the first Negro beat me. He beat me until he was exhausted. And after he beat, the state highway patrolman ordered the second Negro to take the blackjack. And during the time he was beating, I began to work my feet because that was a horrible experience. And the state highway patrolman ordered the first Negro that had beat to sit on my feet while the second one beat. And I just began to scream where I couldn't control it. And then the white man got up and began to beat me in my head. I have a blood clot now in the artery to the left thigh and a permanent kidney injury on the right side from that beating. These are the things that we go through in the state of Mississippi, just trying to be treated like a human being.
Nobody ever said Fannie Lou Hamer. It was always Miss Fannie Lou Hamer.
Many things have been written up about the marches and all of those things, but there were little things going on that many of the women led the movement for.
We asked people who would go with us and register to vote the next day. I think three or four people raised their hands. Fannie Lou Hamer was one of them. We arrive at the voter registration site, and everybody becomes immobilized. And then Fannie Lou Hamer starts to sing, and she gets up, walks on the bus, and everybody there follows her. There was no middle ground with Fannie Lou Hamer. You were either for freedom or you were not. And said, "I can't hate white people and hope to see the face of Jesus."
And I remember her back door. She had 16 bullet holes around her screen door where the people had tried to kill her.
She took a beating in Winona that would have driven most people away from the movement. It drove her into it.
She gave up working in the cotton fields, and she organized the people, she organized the women. And she said, "If we have food, we don't have to beg anybody, then we can fight. We can fight. We can fight for the rights of others."
She loved people. She loved Mississippi. She loved this country.
Okay, that was the last clip. I tried to have some longer clips, but unfortunately, the software that I used would not. I'm gonna have to probably find some more software because I think the longer clips were very interesting, also. But you know, this is something that if you want to check this out, you know, check the story out and get more information about her. You can always go online, and YouTube has got some videos and stuff like that. But, you know, it's just, you know, when you read and listen to some of these stories about what people went through back in the day, you know, just to get simple, basic human rights, you know, the right to vote, you know, because that's what the, you know, that's what, you know, the law said. We allegedly were all created equal. Allegedly. And so when these people went out to try to get people registered to vote, all the stuff they had to go through to do that, you know, she was beaten. A lot of people were killed. I did a show on the Freedom Riders, how, you know, cops were just killing people. You know, it must have been something terrible to go through some stuff like that back in the day. I couldn't imagine what it was like to even go through anything like that. But, you know, she was one of the fighters back in the day about her as much as we should. So that's pretty much the reason why I picked to talk about her tonight. So, you know, whenever you get a chance, you know, go back, you know, find information about her. Like I said, YouTube has got a lot of information about her. I'm telling you, it's just, you know, it's just, you know, messed up what the stuff that these people had to go through just to ask for just, you know, basic human rights. And they weren't allowed to have them. And that's why I'll say today, and I will say this today, that America has no right telling other people, especially other countries, anything about human rights. Zero. Ain't got no business telling nobody how to, nothing else, considering the human rights record of this country. Got no right to tell nobody nothing. Not a thing. So, we've got about 20 minutes left. And I've got a call. I'm going to hit the button.
Hello, Anthony.
Hello. Hey, what's up?
Good topic you had. You know, I disagree with you about Americans, what they should say to others, because it wasn't all of America that was doing what was going on in that state. So, I mean, we can't say that, because she herself was for people having the right of self-determination. That wasn't the federal government that was doing that. Matter of fact, it was the federal government that was called in to stop it. Could have been called in much earlier, but when it ultimately was brought to a stop, it was by the federal government, and it's the federal government that tried to dictate policies based on human rights. And by the way, this Constitution don't recognize human rights, to recognize the right of the person. But the thing is with Fannie Lou is that she's not mentioned as much as she should be, I think. But the thing is what are we going to do now to recognize the things that she went through that can be turned into something positive and self-creating? How do we commemorate her? Do we commemorate her with a research center? Do we commemorate her with scholarships? Why come those things aren't being pursued? Why come they not already in fruition? You know, it's one thing.
Yeah.
That we hear people recognize and talk about what happened in the past. But, you know, in St. Louis, they had a hospital. We have a hospital that's called Jewish Hospital. Reason it's Jewish Hospital, because Jews wasn't allowed to go to Barnes Complex, Barnes Hospital. My mom died in Barnes Hospital, by the way. But they had to start their own hospital because they weren't allowed to go to the traditional hospital. So that was wrong. And they built their own hospital, not only there in St. Louis, but elsewhere too. So they get to the point where they say, well, I don't need you no more. And that there, I think, is one of the ultimate ways to get back, seek revenge in a positive way. See, you got somebody that don't like you. Then you pass all sorts of laws and put all kind of stipulation on them where they say, I like you. But is it just on the surface? Is it innerly that they like you? I would rather get to the point where I tell them, I don't need you no more. Now you have put them into a corner of beginning isolation. You know what I'm saying? It's mm-hmm. like not being picked for the team for whatever reason. You feel isolated. So that's the way get back at the things that people like her suffered and went through. Your children, your boys, make them as strong as they can be. Provide them with the resources so that when they go out to compete, their motivating effort to rather going to bed at 1 o'clock in the morning, I'm going to stay up another hour under the name of Fannie Lou Hamer. You follow me?
Yep. Yep.
Good.
That's pretty much why I picked talking about her tonight, because, you know, she's one of those stories that, you know, whenever you talk about, you know, the civil rights movement, you talk about MLK, you talk about Malcolm X, you know, you talk about a lot of other people, but, you know, you hardly ever talk about her. And her story is, you know, like I said, you know, she got, you know, she was beat. I mean, it, you know, that story,
yeah,
she
was
told when she got
was
beat.
She married?
I mean, that's just.
Where was the men at? You have to ask the question.
Yeah.
A woman out there by herself. Where are the black men? And then hey, same question today. Where are the black men? I ain't talking about males. I'm talking about men.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, this her story needs to be, you know, talked about a little bit more than it is, because I mean, it's the stuff that she went through. Sure.
So when you raise your son, one thing that you want to make sure is when they depart from your household that they are men. They got the foundation, they have the basis, they have the mindset of being a black man. A black man, not just a male.
So that's why I said, you know, earlier about, you know, people, you know, if anybody listen to the story, you know, and, you know, you can only cover so much in the time that I have, but if you want to get more information about it, you know, there's interesting videos about her on YouTube. There's more writings about her, you know, there's books written about her. But yeah, I mean, her story is just.
You know
what
state has the largest concentration of black people?
Mississippi.
Mississippi. About 37%, and it's increasing because blacks in the north are retiring to the south, which I think is a good thing, if not just for the weather. But you have, I think, 17 counties on either side of the Mississippi River that's predominantly African-American black. You know, they don't look at African-American like people look at it, the designation like they do up north. Use the designation as black down there. And you might have one or two still use the designation of Negro. But you have 17 counties that have a majority of that population. Those counties should be prosperous. They should be self-sustaining. They should not be wanting. The way in the inner cities today, in the up north where we have immigrants that's controlling the things that you need in order for subsistence and make it convenient, like having convenience stores combined with a gas mart where you get gas. They should control that. Blacks should control that down there.
Mm-hmm.
They should have superb education systems that don't want for nothing. What you don't get from the state, you got to provide uniquely for you, for those kids.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way you get back.
Yep. Wow.
And your crying call, your battle call, your motivation call is her. The quotes that she says. So anyway, I really think it's good that you use that her as a subject matter. And I hope that what I could contribute helped to lead some thinking along those lines.
Yeah. Yeah. I hope, matter of fact, I hope somebody's listening. I hope they, you know, hear about the story and do a little bit more research about it and find out a little bit more about it. Because I mean, she's very interesting story. But it's just,
well, she's the head of that one party, the Mississippi Freedom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And the stuff that she went through is just, you know, they beat her. They almost killed her and all, it's just, you know, and then she was sterilized against her will. And I did a story about that. A while ago, what they call it, eugenics. I think that's the right name for it. Sterilization practice. Matter of fact, they used to do it, you know, mostly southern states, but I mean they did it in North Carolina. Matter of fact, they got there's a plaque downtown that talks about that, where they would take poor people, mostly black people, and sterilize them against their will and all that. You know, they would do, especially when they had girls that were, you can't say the word now, but, you know, retarded, you know, they had a mental issue. They would sterilize them because they used to believe back then, you know, they don't want them having kids that, you know, would come out like them. So they'd have them sterilized. You know, stuff like that is just.
Well, we could speak a lot on that.
Wow.
But, hey, that should be a motivation for not having abortions the way women are having them today. Here, they forcefully sterilized this woman, trying to.
Mm-hmm.
It could have killed her. But if they break her spirit and she's alive as living proof of what would happen, they'd rather for you to be alive, those who have those intentions. When I say they, it's those who have those evil intentions, because they can point to you. And you sitting over there, and you're going to be mum, mute, and you possibly going to tell them, those who's riling up in an activist position like she was, this is what can happen to you. But her story should be a rallying cry of motivation. And that's a woman that should be commemorated. You don't see her commemorated. They tell everybody else's story, which is all right. But that woman should be commemorated. I tell you another one, Kylie House. Nobody ever talks about her neither. But anyway, I'm getting older. Nobody listens to me no more.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and close this out. Matter of fact, I didn't have the laptop plugged up because I was outside in the car, so I'm about to lose power in a few minutes. But I wonder if it's still sleeting out there, because I was sitting out there in the car doing the show, and it was sleeting out there pretty good. I think it may have stopped. But
maybe. I'm down here south where the temperature is going to get up to like 70 tomorrow, so I feel for you.
Oh my goodness. I'm glad those days get here.
We got geese and ducks that fly south for the winter, and I know my brain's bigger than theirs, so I say I'm gonna do it too.
Yeah, God, Marty, I'm telling you. I mean, this weather's been up and down lately. You know, it's warm one day, then it's crappy the next. I think they're expecting, rain here for the rest of the week and some crummy weather. We got it tonight, and they were calling. Matter of fact, they've already got schools opening up late tomorrow and all that kind of stuff. So I don't know what we're going to get tomorrow, but probably ain't going to be good, but we'll find out.
Yeah, well, you take care of yourself and your family, and be careful.
Okay, you too.
When you go outside. All right, then. Bye-bye.
All right. I appreciate it. Thanks for calling in, as usual. So we're going to shut it down, but we'll be back next week. They won't be sleeping outside again. We'll find out next week. So I'll be back next week with another topic. And until then, I will see you later. Peace out.